Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Hey everyone, before we get started with today's podcast, I wanted to mention that I'm offering one-to-one emotional sobriety coaching sessions. You can book bundles of coaching that also include access to the Thrive Sober community. All coaching is to be booked by application as I only have so many places to offer and I really want to work with people who are deadly serious about getting and staying successfully sober. Head over to sassysobermum.com/coaching to find out more information and submit your interest. Okay, let's dive into the podcast. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm talking to Jessica in Norwich and she is 2048 days sober, which we worked out, me with a calculator, that that's 5.5 years. So it's really timely because I'm going to turn 5 years next month, Jessica. So it's really nice to sort of talk to somebody in a similar zone in sobriety to where I am. So thanks for coming on the show. Maybe you can tell us a bit about yourself so we can get to know you a little bit.
Okay, so I'm Jessica. I live in Norfolk, beautiful county of. I'm 44 years old. I have two children who are 12 and nearly 15, and I co-parent with their dad very effectively. I work in education and I work for the local council, so I've got a very varied and busy job. And my hobbies and things I like doing, I love to crochet, one of my favorite things, and I bought a van last year, so I've been partially converting it to a camper. So I've got a mini camper van as well.
Well, that is the dream, isn't it? I think there's a few dreams there. Having children at the ages where you can go off and do a little bit of traveling or maybe go on your own. And then crocheting as well. Girl after my own heart. I love crocheting. I just made my first little jumper. I jumped from blankets to a jumper, which was a big jump. And it is just so therapeutic and so lovely. I love it. What plans have you got in terms of the camper then? Where's the first place you'll go?
Well, I actually got it last year. So I have already camped out in it a couple of times. But I absolutely love festivals. I work festivals in the summer. And so I will be going and working some festivals in it and I'll have a nice comfy bed.
Wow, brilliant. Do you do the big, do you do Glastonbury or anything like that?
Not Glastonbury, no. I mean, that's quite a difficult one to get into for volunteering, but Latitude, I've worked the last, it'd be my fourth year this year working it, and Camp Vestable as well, and then sometimes little tiny ones. And I'm going to Wilderness for the first time this year, which I'm really excited about.
That I've heard of that. I've never thought about volunteering at a festival. What a great idea.
It's brilliant. It's the best of both worlds because I did lots of festivals when I was younger. It's one of my special interests as well. I can talk for ages about it. So I did it a lot when I was younger, and then also once when I had children. And then I got to the point, I've been so many, I was a bit like, well, I want to see the other side of it. And so finding volunteering roles, and I do like different things. I do some charity work and I've worked for a community interest company as well. So I get to try lots of different things, meet loads of different people, and it's the best. I love it so much.
And rewarding as well, because you get to really give back to community I think volunteering is also something I'd love to get into when the kids are just a bit older. At the moment, they're all quite needy and they need me at home at weekends and things. But
my husband and I, we talk about volunteering and yeah, it's just a nice thing to do, isn't it? To use some of your time to give to people that are less fortunate or really need help. But oh, sounds amazing. So right, let's go back to the beginning then and talk about your life with alcohol and how that's impacted your life up until
Right. Okay. So
it is a big question.
It is a big question. And I hear this a lot, like on your podcast and other ones, that it always seems to be women of my age. You know, we were very much of that ladette generation, that culture, that 90s culture. We had those certain role models that were like those girls that could drink a pint in the pub and be with the lads. And that was kind of our, you know, our inspiration, if you like. So I think, you know, so many people can relate to that. So I was certainly sort of part of that culture. And I think that was kind of when it started, really. I mean, for me, when I had my first drink, when I was probably about 15, maybe, properly. Before that, I remember having a sip of dad's beer on a Sunday. And my mum going, oh no, you can't give, they can't give the children beer. Oh, just a sip, just a sip. And that just being, you know, part of life. And my parents always, I didn't drink to excess, but they always had like a glass of wine in the evening, always enjoyed wine. And my dad would have a beer at the weekend. And sometimes I was allowed a shandy if we were out for dinner or something like that, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, the first proper drink, I think, was when I was around 15. And it was a friend and I, we bought we got a bottle of vermouth.
Oh, God.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so much about what it was. It was like the taste of it. It was more about suddenly this feeling that it gave me. I was like, wow, I'm an interesting and exciting person. And it was that effect more than the actual drinking. And, you know, that would be it. That's what we, you know, we would do. Friends and I would do that like most weekends. And it would be like the really cheap and horrible things mainly. And it was also Alco Pops were the thing. So it would be like Hooch and Mad Dog and all of those sorts of things that were just so easy to drink, because it's just like drinking like lemonade and you know, you don't notice it. And then that sort of like carried on. It was something that it just became a part of who I was, the fact that I like to drink. And I just became part of my, I guess, my personality and who I was. And it also, I felt, made me a more interesting person and less weird, because I was like the weird girl. But drinking, no, I wasn't the weird girl.
You can totally see how you would feel like you fit in socially in that, you know, I've talked to a few people on this podcast as well that had that more social anxiety and that feeling of wanting to fit in. And when you're a teenager, that is the most important thing in your world. All you want to do is fit in, don't you? And, you know, be normal, in inverted commas.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to college, I went sort of quite, that's what we used to call it back in the day, quite square. So like in my first year of college, I stayed in and I did all my work and I was a good girl and I was fine with that. I had this like spate of not really doing any, going out and doing anything for a year. And then I met a lovely young man at a fancy dress party and, started going out with him. He was quite a bit older than me. He didn't really drink to excess, but then I sort of got back into it again. And then I mixed with different people. They weren't really part of college. They were just sort of people I met then through this, you know, this boyfriend. And yeah, I would just sort of enjoy drinking. And then we didn't go out together for very long. And I got with somebody else and we ended up moving in together quite young. So I think I had just turned 19 when we moved in together, and we lived together for a good couple of years. And that involved those couple of years involved a lot of drinking, a lot of alcohol. One of the criteria for us moving somewhere was the place we moved to had to have a pub in walking distance. That was the criteria.
But those are the sorts of decisions you make at 19, though. Really, it's what else? You're not so interested, are you, at 19, about having rolling hills and places to walk at the weekend? I moved out of home at 19. It's a young age, I think, to become independent. And I drank a lot as well when I moved out at 19. I was with older people, and I do think that has an influence. And I was drinking probably most nights, just kind of like almost like party drinking most nights for periods of time, or managing to keep down a job and doing a bit of uni work, although I didn't complete uni. But getting up and working I was working at TGI Fridays, the restaurant. That's quite
fun. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like if someone comes in, you've got a little section of tables, and someone comes in, it's a birthday, you've got to be jumping up and singing on the chairs, and then someone else's birthday, other side of the restaurant, you've all got to bundle together and sing to them. And it's just like so full on, that 6 or 8 hours of working, but then going home and drink. And, it's just carnage, really, just carnage.
Yeah.
So what happened after that?
So I'd lived with that boyfriend, for about a couple of years. And that was when I decided to go and do a degree. And I went to university, because actually I went to like a quite rubbish college at the time, because they did the degree I wanted. And I was 22, so I was still really quite young. Yeah. But going off and doing that, I suddenly had this, I did go quite wild. I went really wild, and I decided to move down there. We'd split up amicably, and I decided to move down there so I could be nearer. And I lived in a student house, and one of the people I lived with was a binge drinker, quite heavily a binge drinker. But we got on really well. Mm-hmm. And then there was another person who lived there who was just sort of, they kind of, I'll have a beer, but I'm not really bothered. I was out in student bar most nights. I remember the fond memories. And yes, I do remember this. When you used to, if you drank so many beers or alcohol pops, you would get like a free T-shirt or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a lot of that on holiday, but I don't know. I didn't do lots of student drinking at uni. I was living in a student house with older people like you, and they tended to drink what felt like very glamorous bottles of wine at home. And I didn't really mingle a lot with the people that I was on a course with. And like I said, I didn't actually do a lot of time at university. So I didn't get into that culture, but I can totally see how that would have been, because I remember some of the student bars, even when I was at college, it was quite crazy. It was very enticing. Just drink as much as you bloody can, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, one of my favourite beer at the time was Kronenbourg. Mm. And I remember sitting there in the bar, and they had this promotion on that if you drank 8 pints, not in one here, but if you drank 8 pints and you had your stamp on your card, you could get a free T-shirt.
Jeez, that's crazy, isn't it? When you look back, it's so irresponsible.
Well, I got it in one night.
Yeah.
Thought, that was hilarious. There was another one with it was a air hockey table.
Mm.
I think that was 6 bottles of alcohol pops that had to be had to drink for that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of became more of a, oh, I'm going to just see if I can do it, you know, yeah. a bit of a challenge for yeah. myself.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would just sort of become that I'd go out. It wasn't, I didn't really stay in and drink so much, unless like we did have that occasional thing with the housemates that we might have a drink together or might have dinner. It was always going out. It was always being in clubs or pubs. I worked in that trade too as well. I worked in bars and things like that and restaurants, and that's all part of that sort of same, you know, fast-paced culture as well. You know, you get used to that. You finish at 2 o'clock in the morning and then you're drinking. Well, that was years ago, and you know, some places, but you know, you'd be going and going and working, and then you'd be like, you'd be hitting the clubs and what have you. And yeah, I'd love it. That was what I did. And one of my biggest issues, I look back now, it was a big issue, is that I never wanted that party to end.
Mm.
And people were going, oh, well, we'll go to bed. And I'd just be like, no, there's more time.
Yes.
I must drink more. And I just could not let that end, because it was almost like I'm on this high and I cannot let this finish, because then I'm back to normality and it's boring and it's horrible. And yeah, that carried on for a good couple of years. I ended up moving out of the student house, mainly because of the person that I was living with, who they had a lot of their own issues with drinking. And it got to the point where they were becoming quite quite violent and abusive towards me and the other housemate. So we moved out, and I had to go and move back in with my mum and dad. I think I was about 24, and I would still go out on my own, local pubs, and I'd sit at the bar and I would drink and I would talk to whoever.
Mm.
It was always out, never in, always out, just talking to people, doing karaoke. That was another thing that I loved doing. And I think looking back, I was probably quite lonely.
Yeah.
And I was trying to sort of fill a gap in my life.
Mm.
And then I met my children's dad when I was, I was almost 25, I think, when I met him. And he's quite a bit older than me. He's a bit more sensible, but he also loves drinking. And actually, the thing that attracted me to him was because on his, there was a website called Face Party. Do you remember Face Party?
No, I'm not familiar with that. No.
No, it was before Facebook. This is how long ago.
Yeah, because I know there was MySpace. And Friends Reunited, those were the sort of early social platforms, weren't they? Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, so we met on Face Party, and you could you'd have a profile, a bit like any dating profile, and you could then pick statements or quotes. And one of his, he'd put his eternal dilemma, was it beer or wine? And I thought, oh my goodness, I have the same dilemma. and that was why I messaged him, was because I could relate to that.
Yeah.
Which, again, looking back, is like, oh my goodness. Yeah. But at the time, it's like, oh, you're my soulmate.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, that party carried on. And because then I moved in him quite quickly. He had his own place. And again, we would drink a lot. He'd get back from work on a Saturday and we would go to the local pub and we would drink. And on Sunday, we would drink. And there would always be a light glass of wine in the week. And, you know, it just became part of our everyday life.
Yeah.
And how we were.
A lot of people's story, though, mind that, I think. I would definitely say all of the relationships I had from that kind of, 1920 time up until my husband now, all of the relationships leading up to meeting my husband were all built on the foundation of alcohol, and they were all heavy drinking relationships. And if anything, I think they got heavier as I got older. I think that's quite normal, to be honest, to meet people. If you're a drinker, to meet another drinker and drink together. And that's why I think it's quite difficult for sometimes people that are in this space now, this sober space, and they want to stop drinking, but perhaps the partner is still very big on drinking, and that creates that inner conflict and that turmoil, and, you know, it must be hard. But yeah, so you met your children's dad, and what age did you have your first child?
So I was 29 when I had my eldest. Yeah. So we got married 2007. And, you know, we had the lovely wedding, you know, and looking back, I don't regret a moment of it. And he's a lovely person. And I look back on those photos still because it was lovely. And then we had our eldest when I was 29. I think he was about 32, 33. And, you know, pregnancy, I was fine with not drinking. In fact, I just didn't want to actually drink or eat anything because I felt so sick. Yeah. So that probably helped. And then I was breastfeeding as well. I think I breastfed until she was about 8 months. And then kind of just, you know, the wine snuck back in again. And I think that's when the drinking changed again, because it wasn't so much like before. I'd been downing pints. And one thing I noticed that after I had my children, I couldn't drink red wine. Mm. Couldn't touch it. Just bizarre. Whereas before, that had always been my drink of choice. So it went to white wine. So I did become the wine mummy. Mm. And it was that, oh, I can't wait to get home for a glass of wine kind of thing. That it would start with like just a glass of wine in the evening and then carry on. And even like the day that I found out I was pregnant with our second child, I remember I was going up for, I was going to have a shower, and I thought, oh, I'll just do a test quickly. Took my glass of wine up to the shower, did my pregnancy test, and thought, oh,
God, yeah.
Maybe don't drink the wine. But, you know, that's how a part of my life it had become. It had become so just normal. That was what you did. I could take my glass of wine up to the shower with me, I'd take my glass of wine in the bath with me.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. That was self-care.
Yes, it was. This is how I looked after myself as a busy mum.
Yeah, relate to that a lot, relate to that. Would you say that, because you have described your drinking as being very sociable, actually, and being, you know, being out of the house, and obviously when you have children, when you have baby, young kids in the house, you can't go out as much as you were, and then that drinking in the house gets very established, if it wasn't already. I mean, I could take both, thank you very much. I could be out and I could be at home, and was like that. But for you, was that a change as well?
It definitely became more frequent. It would be, and because also he worked quite long hours because he works in food retail. And so I'd be on my own for quite like long periods of the day and nights and, you know, holidays and things like that. So I did spend a lot of time on my own. So actually treating myself to a glass of wine in the evening was the way that I would just, you know, manage. And, you know, he never said anything about it, because actually he did the same. The first thing he would do when he got in was pour a drink. So it just became such a normal thing for us that we didn't really think of it. You know, there wasn't any issues with it. But then there started to be like a few things that, or a few kind of incidents that happened well, not so much incidents, but that there had been occasions where things had happened which had made me go, no, this isn't good. This is not good. And and they make me feel quite ashamed now that they happened, especially with having young children. And I think, oh my goodness, that was, why did I do that? Yeah. And I hope now, you know, they can see that. I know certainly my eldest will comment and go, she's like, mum doesn't drink, dad does drink. And she's very aware of that. And I think she gets to then see, you know, what it's like for somebody, you know, who doesn't drink, and she's able to see both sides, which I think is a really good thing for children. But there've been a few things. So there was one when I think he was under one, and my brother and his now wife, they came round for dinner one night, and we all drank so much. And I wasn't meant to drink too much, because the next day somebody was had bought something off me from eBay. I think it was like a cot bed or something like that. I can't remember. It was definitely like a baby thing. And it was in our garage. And I thought, well, I need to get up early because these people are coming around the next day. But obviously that went out the window, and we just drank. And I mean, I think we went through about four or five bottles of wine between the four of us. Cringe now. I remember waking up to a banging on the door the next day, and this lovely young family were stood at the door saying, we've come to pick up the cop. And I just must have stunk, yeah. Looked like death warmed up, opening my garage and getting this cot out, going, here you go, here's the money. And it was like, and I could almost see that they were like, oh my goodness, this woman is absolutely smashed, and we're buying this cot off her. Yeah. And looking back, it's like, oh my goodness, that's disgraceful. How could I have done that?
I think it's so easy though, isn't it, to look back. I mean, I haven't met anyone that hasn't got an array of those horrible experiences where there's so much deep shame. And you know what? I think in some sort of strange way, those really dark moments that make you feel really bad about yourself collected together are the things that push you over the line to make a difference. So that's the sort of the silver lining. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I'm quite good at blocking out a lot of my things that, but there are certainly some things in my, etched in my memory that I feel horrified about. Some things that really frightened me as well, like waking up and not knowing if the kids were in the house type thing, you know, and you just think, what, how irresponsible is that, you know? But yeah, no, it's certainly that shame, I think, is something that a lot of over drinkers feel. Don't know if that makes it any better, but
I mean, it's scary, because it almost seemed to be like in my 30s, it just got worse. Because like when I did go out, and I worked when the children were really small, I was working nights at a supermarket. So I'd work them around their dad, and it meant that I was around in the day, and, you know, that worked quite well. And I did that for like 4 or 5 years. And I didn't drink on those nights. But then if there was a case where I had like a work night out, I'd go wild. Yeah. Absolutely wild. There was one time where I had, well, I don't remember actually coming back, but I remember walking down the road at about 3 a.m. holding my boots, and I managed to, and I'd already sort of done it a little bit at a festival while walking on uneven ground. I managed to tear the cartilage in one of my knees.
Oh, ouch.
Because of trying to walk in these heels. in the, you know, in the dark. And actually, not just in my 30s, but in my 20s, some of the situations I put myself in, going, oh, yeah, it's all right, I'll walk back.
Yeah.
Middle of the city, you know, my word, how much I put myself at risk. I mean, yeah. And then doing that again as a woman in her 30s who's mother of two children, just disgraceful. And there was one works do I went on where I did black out completely. I just didn't know what happened. And I remember waking up on this sofa in this like hotel bar, and this colleague of mine was going, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, fine, where are we? and this colleague was quite young. They were like a graduate apprentice kind of person, so they were like 18-19, so I was being a great example to this young person. And this young person's parents dropped me off at home, and well, they were probably pretty disgusted actually, but yeah, I did black out. And then I spent the rest of the weekend with just like anxiety that I had done something wrong and that everyone was going to talk. But got back to work on the Monday, no one said anything, and it was like, oh, is this kind of a, you know, what goes on tour stays on tour? Or is it because everyone's so mortified they just don't want to say anything? And it was, you know, things like that that had happened that sort of made me reflect on maybe I need to calm it down.
Yeah.
So I did that typical thing. And I hear, again, so many people you've interviewed go, well, instead of drinking this, I thought I'd drink this instead. So I found that wine, as much as I liked it, would give me quite a headache the next day. But lager didn't.
Yeah.
Lager and ale didn't. So I thought, well, I'll just drink lager and ale. That'll be fine. And I remember, this is the clearest in my mind, which was then, it was when I just went, that's it, I can't do this anymore. It was my my brother's wedding. It was his, like, well, they'd got married, but they had like a blessing and then a reception in, because they went away to get married, like a destination wedding. And the place where they had their wedding, on the bar, they were doing an offer on beer. I had scratch cards this time. So each time you bought a pint of this beer, you got a scratch card. And each time, it's getting a free pint.
Mm.
So, yeah, I was drinking pints and pints and pints. And just going, you know, larging it.
Yeah.
Ended up having a massive row with my children's dad, who basically told me I was a disgrace. His parents drove me and the children home. He wouldn't talk to me. I was crying. I don't even know really what happened. But yeah, he said I was a disgrace. And the next day I woke up and went, I'm not drinking again. And that was it.
Wow.
I stopped. And I'm really amazed at that, because I think, yeah, you know, sometimes people will have that sort of time where they'll, you know, they'll have a break and then they might come back to it. You know, we're all different. It's like, it's got to be the right time as well. It's, and I think I was compared to like something like giving up smoking. It's about timing. Mm-hmm. And people aren't going to make a change if they're not ready as well. But for me, it was just something flicked. And I just thought, I can't put myself through this anymore. I'm 38 years old. And, you know, my children are suffering. I'm suffering. I'm not able to function in the same way. So I'm stopping. And I just kind of, I didn't actually tell anyone. I just stopped. And then that was it. You know, I just stopped. He carried on because I wasn't going to like tell him not to. And I mean, to be honest, I do think it was probably one of the reasons why we did part.
Mm-hmm.
Is because I didn't drink. He's never said that, but I do think it is. It's one of the reasons. because we broke up in lockdown. And it was amicable, it was fine. And, we have a really good relationship now. But I know that's one of the reasons. But I don't regret it.
Yeah.
Because no one regrets not drinking, because my life is just so much better now. So much so.
When you stopped, and I stopped exactly the same way, it wasn't planned. It was after another mental night out. I just couldn't cope with that feeling again. I'd just had enough of it. And I just stopped as well. And I did have a couple of times before that I had stopped, but I knew, like you, I just knew. I really agree with the timing thing. I think that's really, 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 really important that the timing is right. But I had no idea really how to do it in a way that was going to really support long-term success. But I kind of did that typical thing where you go on Google and social media and you just start looking and trying to take things in and see what everyone else is doing. But what did you do? So when you made that decision that you're going to stop on that day and that was you, what did you do next?
I started reading This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. And what I love most about that book is the fact it said, you don't have to stop drinking while you're reading this. And I liked that, because I don't like it when people tell me what to do. I was like, okay. But actually, I wasn't drinking. But then the more I was reading, I was like, I don't want to. And it was so powerful reading that book. And then that was still when there wasn't really the community that there is now. Definitely not. There wasn't really many podcasts or anything about or much advice. Annie Grace was well known. She was the most well known person, and also I think Alan Carr as well. He did a book, didn't he?
That's the one. I feel like those two are kind of fairly on par with each other. People either read This Naked Mind or they read The Easy Way to Stop. I read the latter, but it was the same thing in that it encouraged you to drink whilst you were reading it. And I was just exactly like you. You described it perfectly for me, that actually, even though I liked that it said drink, I sort of felt a bit of pride. I felt a stab of pride when I was reading the book, because I was thinking, well, I'm not drinking. Well, I'm not reading it, and that was sort of making me feel good. But like you, the way that he explained things, and I'm sure they've got quite similar information in both those books, but the way that he explained things, I just started to think, why would I want this drink? Mm-hmm. I really started to believe that alcohol was giving me nothing. In fact, if anything, it was taking away. And I'd had this whole, all of my drinking had been built on the belief that I was gaining something valuable and desirable and glamorous and with drinking. And by the end of that book, I realized it wasn't giving me anything. And don't get me wrong, there were still challenges that I had to deal with where I forgot that maybe temporarily, or I had to work harder on reinforcing that message to myself. But essentially, it was a game changer. It sounds like that book was similar for you. And because... Yeah. We entered sobriety at a really similar time. You're 6 months or so ahead of me. I agree. I think that just before I'd stopped drinking, there was the unexpected joy of being sober. That book was on the scene. It was the Sober Diaries, Claire Poole.
Yes.
Her book was... and then soon after that, I think We Are the Luckiest started to come out. And yeah, there wasn't a huge amount of sober influences, but there was a small community.
Yeah.
But it certainly wasn't anything on the scale that it's got to now, which is fantastic. I mean, the more people spreading this message and trying to share their stories, the better, I think. But Yeah. And also there wasn't the diversity of alcohol-free drinks. So I don't know about you, but I remember in the beginning what really got me through every evening at first was my two Beck's Zeros, which actually they're quite disgusting. Beck's Blue, that's right. I mean, you know, there's, I mean, maybe even they taste better now, but it really helped me because it gave me that ritual that I'd got into, which was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, have those drinks. And that just sort of two of those just helped me. Did you find that? Did you do any of the sort of alcohol-free thing?
I think for me, especially in the first 2 months, my sweet tooth just went through the roof, which I know now is, you know, the reason is you've removed that sugar and you need more. I've always had a sweet tooth, but it went through the roof and I did put on quite a bit of weight, but I wasn't bothered about it because I thought, well, actually it's probably better for me to put on a bit of weight than it is for me to keep drinking. So, you know, I kind of just went through it. I didn't really like Beck's Blue very much. I remember having it during pregnancy and I wasn't all gone with it, but I'd have things like tonic water or sparkling water or things like that. But yeah, like you said, there wasn't really anything about. And now, you know, you sport for choice, and which is amazing, but you know, that's how far we've come. I've got the tracker thing on my phone, but I never really struggled with getting through each day thinking, oh, I'm nearly done a month. It was more of a, I'm feeling better. And it was almost like everything was clearer and crisper. And I was starting to actually find out who I actually was, because I wasn't this person who I thought I was, the person that was, you know, hidden behind alcohol. I actually was like a person that kind of wanted to be a bit quiet, enjoyed being at home, and I really enjoy my own company. And sobriety is, taught me that my own company is brilliant. And I like being with other people. I enjoy my own company. I'm comfortable in it. And it certainly seems like with each year that things have changed. I mean, I listened to the Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. I think it was when we were in lockdown. And, you know, you go on your daily walk. And I'd listen to it on my daily walk. And there was so much of it that resonated with me. And then I can't remember which, I think it was the Sunshine one, where she talks about, you know, that kind of the years after the first year and everything. And it's that how things change each year in sobriety. And it's quite an exciting adventure that things are different. Oh, suddenly I'm doing this. And like I went, when I was first asked to go and work Latitude with a friend who runs the CIC, I was coming up 3 years. That's 2021. And it was a test event for COVID. And she said, oh, you know, do you want to come along and work at Latitude? And I was like, yeah. And I was not fazed about being there and not drinking. Didn't bother me.
Yeah.
And I had the best time.
I bet.
Because I remember everything. And I think I've enjoyed all of these festivals I've been to since 2021 because I've been sober than I ever have, because I've been in the moment. I've been able to wake up all sparkly in the morning. I've remembered those silly things. And one thing at Latitude, I don't know if, have you ever been to Latitude? Are you familiar with it?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, so at Latitude, they were well known for doing these recyclable cups, and they came in loads of different designs. Unfortunately, they don't do them anymore, but they had loads. In 2021, you'd get one with each drink. And I made it my mission to collect as many as possible because I was working in a big team, there's about 12 of us. And I would do this because people were so drunk, they'd be dropping them. So I'd be going around picking them up.
Yeah.
taking advantage of all the drunk people. And they'd be like, you'd go and hand it in and you'd get like 10p or something like that, or you'd get a new cup. But no, I was going around collecting these cups, and then I would say to the rest of the team, oh, you know, who wants that one? Who wants that one? And it was almost like, it was kind of like a little perk for me of not drinking meant that I, you know, I would be fine. I'd be finding all of these cups, and it just became a little bit of a sort of silly laugh, really. But yeah, it suddenly everything is just much more sparkly. And when I say things like that, I think, oh gosh, that sounds really cheesy, but it is so true.
It is true. I totally, totally get it. I totally get it. And what I really like about what you're saying here, because I feel like I talk about this a lot, but I tend to talk about this with people that are earlier in their sobriety, or maybe even 1 year or 2 years in. But I don't talk to very many people that are 5 years in, you know, like we are. I've got another friend who's 5 years, and we talk about it. But generally, my community and chatting to people online, lots of people are in the early part of the journey, because they're usually seeking help. But I always talk about how every year has got better and better, and every year is slightly different, but slightly different / better. And it's hard to explain, really, and it's very unexpected. So I remember when I was 2 or 3 years in, that's when I really started to put a lot of focus and effort on my sober Instagram page, because I'd sort of thought, I basically got sober, used the Instagram for 100 or so days, 150 days, got bored of it all, kind of came away from it, didn't look at it really that much for a year, maybe nearly 2 years. And then sort of around 2.5 years, I thought, maybe I'll write a book. That was genuinely what I thought. I'm gonna write a book, because people would say to me, oh, you should write a book. And I think, oh, okay, well, maybe I will. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to write a book, it would be useful to have a community that would like to know more about it or maybe buy it. So I thought perhaps what I'll start doing is I'll just start sharing bits and pieces of my journey in a bit more detail, you know, warts and all type stuff. And I remembered starting that and growing that Instagram presence and things like that, and getting really involved in the community. And that was kind of coming up to 3 years. And I just remember 3 years in, I was like, not to sound arrogant, but I know so much about this now. And I was training to be a coach, and I just felt like I'd peaked at 3 years. You know, I'd really peaked my, but it's so funny because another year passes and I hit 4 years and I go up another level, and now I'm nearly 5 years. I feel like, oh my God, it's not that I didn't know anything at 3 years, but what I feel like I've learned about not just sobriety, but just life in general and myself. And I don't know, it's just got bigger and better and more vibrant. And I find that really, I just find that so lovely and reassuring, because I genuinely think now that it's just going to keep going, and it's like you keep going up another step every year. You go up another step, and that is really exciting, because it's like, where does that go to? You know, who knows what we're going to be doing in another 5 years?
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, I love it, and I think as well, you almost like turn back time, because I feel younger, I feel healthier than I did in my 20s. I mean, I've started working out. I work with a personal trainer once a week, and, you know, I'm really lucky I'm able to do that. And I, you know, try and keep myself as healthy as possible. I eat well and I get out and walk and I feel great. And it is, I think it's absolutely 100% down to the fact that I am sober. And I'm able to do those things. I'm able to sort of achieve more because I haven't got this thing that's, you know, lurking around. And it's so much difference as well, because like with, again, I've always suffered with anxiety and depression, and obviously alcohol is a depressant. And then as soon as that comes out, suddenly, I don't feel as bad. Mm. And you know, it makes such a difference that, you know, I haven't got this thing that's kind of holding me back. And yeah, and it's incredible. It's just so incredible. And I was talking to a friend recently who said, oh, you know, I'm trying to, because I'm finding it's making me really miserable. And I said, oh, good for you. And she went, oh, I'm only like a couple of weeks. And I said, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I said, every day at a time, start at a time. I said, you know, I'm not going to judge you. You've got to do what's right for you, and it's got to be the right time for you. And you know, you don't have to say, I'm never going to do it again. It's got to be that sort of finding out what works. And that's the way I feel that I can like support friends. If you know, if they do reach out to it, but I do sometimes get the, oh, you're a goody two shoes. So I joke back going, look, I've partied probably harder than you ever have in your life, and I'm done with it now. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, no, seriously, I have. Because, yeah, I don't need to do that, because I've done it. And you think a lot of that, like some of these famous musicians and that who are sober. I think someone like Moby, for example, I've read both his books where he talks in depth about his sobriety, where he'd done all of that partying. He'd been crazy for years. But actually now he's quite happy at home with his keyboard and a cup of tea,
yeah,
living his best life, because he's done all of it. And I kind of feel like that. I think, well, I've done that. I just actually want to just enjoy each day, and just, you know, every bit of joy that comes from each day, even if it's, you know, a tiny thing. Yeah. This boy.
At least you notice it though, right? You know, it's like last night I was in my bedroom and the sun was setting, and it sort of sets over, you know, it sort of sets. So I'm pointing, but I appreciate people that are listening can't see where I'm pointing to. But it sort of sets over to the right of the back of my window. And it was a really, really pink, orange and purple sky, but it had these dramatic clouds as well. And so there were these edges of the clouds that almost looked like they were on fire. And there was just all these crazy colours going on. And, you know, I mean, I love a sunset anyway, love a sunrise, love a sunset. I love a flower. I love the smell of a flower, all that sort of stuff. You know, I get excited about it. And I was sort of looking at it, and I really stopped and stared at it for a few minutes. And then I got my young daughter, who's three, and I picked her up and I showed her, you know, what, look at the colours in the sky. And I just thought, in that moment, I really thought, oh God, you know what? It's just these little simple things. I know they sound cheesy as well, but it's these small little simple things. I'm not dashing about like a bear with a sore head, trying to get kids to bed, shouting because I'm frazzled. And don't get me wrong, I have those moments still, trust me. But not as often, you know, not daily, not as often as it used to be when I was drinking. And I didn't stop. I literally didn't. I wasn't really able to stop and smell the roses, you know. I just couldn't, because I was so busy occupying myself with things that I was behind on, or just feeling a bit like I'm running at 70%, or having a bald head, or just having anxiety. I don't know, just not feeling great. And so I always, in those sorts of moments where I notice something, and I notice a lot now, and I remember that happening quite soon into sobriety as well. Suddenly I'd see like tulips or something at the side of the road and think, God, they look beautiful. Or I'd see something and it would like be popping in colour. It would look like it was in HD. It was really weird. Just everything felt sharper and brighter. I really remember that. But what's really nice is that has sort of just hung around now. And that is my norm, to, you know, to notice things. I'll be driving on a motorway and I'll notice the colours in a field against the sky, or I just see things like that. And I just think those sorts of things bring me a lot of joy. And they're really simple things, actually. Like, nature is so beautiful. But I think when I was drinking, I was just walking around with almost my eyes closed all the time. That's kind of how it felt anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, I love I love nature myself, and I did forest school leader training when I when it was 2016. So I was really, I loved being outside. I was really, really immersed in it. But actually, since sobriety, I've become even more immersed in it, really, really noticing those tiny little things. Like a bumblebee came in the house yesterday, and I thought, oh yeah, the bumblebees have woken up and they're starting their nests. And yes, before I would have been excited by that, but now I'm really excited. I'm having to go and look up what bee it is, and I'm wondering where it lives, and I just see that spring's coming, and all the everything's growing, and what plants are going to come out next, and like with the skies. I mean, that's another thing I always love to look at in the evening. What color is the sky? Or what means? Oh, red sky at night. Shepherd's delight. All of those things. Nature has just become even more fabulous. Yeah. Or I totally agree. It's that technicolor color. Yeah. That everything. It's almost like I've got even more colors to appreciate than I had before. It was almost like I had a really dull, reduced palette of colors, and now it's gone to the full spectrum, and it's just wow.
It is wow. Yeah. Nature has wow factor. And I think that's why it's good to get into nature in early sobriety, in any sobriety really, or just in any life. But I think certainly people that are new to the sober world, like you say, sticking on a podcast, sticking on an audiobook, going outside, being in nature, getting some of those natural endorphins going, it's a really good thing to do. And it's a good thing to do daily. I think in the beginning I was doing that sort of thing daily as well. And that was, that made a difference for me. It really did. Really made a difference. Oh, so what would be your top three tips for getting or staying sober?
I think my absolute first one would be, don't even think about trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
I'd often hear people go, well, I stopped drinking and I lost a stone. That didn't happen to me because I ate loads of sweets. But I just feel it's so much more important to not drink than it is to worry about a few pounds, because you can sort that out later. And it's just too big to think about. So I always think, just if you're needing to indulge that sweet tooth, then you need to do that. You need to nourish yourself and feel good, and if that means that you're going to eat a bar of chocolate and you're going to have a big roast dinner, then actually just do it. Just be. So that would be the number one. Number two would be getting out at least once a day, even just to walk around the block. It's still something I try and do now. I always get out at least once a day, and just get some air. Because I think it can help us to sort of reset. And it's kind of low pressure on ourselves. I think sometimes as humans, we think, right, well, I'm going to give up this and I'm going to stop this. And then you put yourself under so much pressure, you can't do any of it at all because it's just too much. But knowing that you're just going to walk for 5 minutes around the block is fine, because maybe you'll do it for 10 minutes the next day and 15 minutes the next day. And build it up, and actually, if you've done it, you've done it. And I think, you know, that's important, which would bring me to like third one, which is celebrate the small wins. And I would say that to anybody regardless, because those little things add up. And it could be a little thing as, oh, I've made it to a day, that's amazing. I've made it to a week, that's amazing. Those are important wins. And you know, they're still to be, they're still to sort of be treasured in the same way, because it's not a competition. You know, I think we could say that we're not competing with ourselves, but you know, when you're saying, oh, you know, 5.5 years, I think, oh, all right then. You know, I've stopped thinking about it now because it's just part of my life. But I think that, yeah, those small little wins of that you've managed to do things, or there's something that you've managed to, I managed to go to that party and not drink, or I drove my friends to wherever, they're small things that actually are big steps.
Yeah.
And they need to be seen as, you know, they need to be celebrated.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think sometimes it can be easy to focus so much on what we're not doing very well in life, or what's not right with us, that we often overlook those small wins, and they are important. And this, if you notice the small wins, you're going to notice a lot of things that are good, and that's going to help you, I think, to keep that focus and shift your focus to that can-do mentality. Because if you're noticing on day 1, 2, 3, whatever little bits each day that you're doing really well, and you practice that, that becomes a habit. That becomes a habit that you do that in your mind. And then it just becomes the norm for you. But all of that just helps to fire the engine of self-confidence and kind of can do. I can do this. I can, of course I can do this, you know? So I think that, you know, starting off with that really small adjustment in just noticing what you've done well. That's why I think journaling and gratitude journaling and all those sorts of tools can be really useful as well, because it sort of forces you to think about what you have done well. Or, you know, of course, what thoughts are going on and what things might be coming up that you need to write out on paper, feelings and bits and pieces. But also just encouraging yourself just to choose one thing you did really well in your day. It's just can be transformational, can be life-changing. I love that. I think, yeah, I get contacted sometimes by people that say, I stopped drinking, I was hoping to lose all this weight and it's not happened. And I think, oh, don't put that pressure on yourself. You know, it's stopping drinking is big enough on its own. Nail that first and then you can do anything else afterwards. Like you, I just let myself have the chocolate and the cake and the ice cream. And, you know, I think my brain was starving for dopamine as well. And that's, you know, the chocolate was giving it a big boost in dopamine. So, but I went with it. I thought, yeah, I can come back. I can handle this when I'm sort of a few months in or 6 months in. And I did. So yeah, brilliant, brilliant advice. If you're open to sharing your journey, where can we find you?
So I'm on Instagram, and my handle is PikaJND. So that's PikaJay, letter N, letter D.
ND, N for November.
N for November, D for...
Yeah.
December? I don't
even get me started on this alphabet. I just use a lot of random words for D. Yeah. D, yeah, why not? December. Diana, December. Oh dear. Oh, it's been so nice, Jessica, to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And yeah, really, really good luck with the camper van and the journeys. And sounds like you've got loads of exciting things on the horizon, and just keep smashing it. That's kind of how I feel like I'm approaching my life as well. And it's a nice place to be. It's something to feel very proud of, deeply proud of, I think, quitting drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And you know, thank you for inviting me on. It's been amazing, actually, to be able to share that and to sort of talk it through again. And no, again, it's that sort of reinforcement of, yeah,
yeah,
totally the right thing for you. And, you know, it's yeah. And it's great to be part of this amazing community, because sometimes I've never felt part of one, but this one, I'm really in it, and it's just the best.
It is. It is very special. And you know, I think the really lovely thing about sharing your story is it is so healing to do that, and then also knowing that it is going to help to heal someone else. There'll be somebody else out there that listens to this show that will really relate hard to you, but might not have even got to the point of stopping drinking, might be just curious about what it's really like, or might be in the first weeks, and you know, we'll just get so much inspiration from hearing us chat today. And I just think that's always so special. It's a privilege to be in that position, really.
Yeah.
So, thank you again. And thank you to everybody else. Goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.